नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Both big and small, flow from the top of Mount Meru. These rivers are like daughters of the mountain, and they flow to the various tracts of land in hundreds of branches. Among the nine Varshas, the tract of land known as Bharatvarsha is understood to be the field of fruitive activities. Learned scholars and saintly persons declare the other eight varshas to be meant for very highly elevated pious persons. After returning from the heavenly planets, they enjoy the remaining results of their pious activities in these eight earthly varshas. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The heavenly planets of enjoyment are divided into three groups: the celestial heavenly planets, the heavenly planets on earth, and the Bila heavenly planets, which are found in the lower regions. Among these three classes of heavenly planets, Bhoma Swarga Padani, the heavenly planets on earth are the eight Varshas, other than Bharat Varsha. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Kshine Punye Martya Lokam Vishanti, when the persons living in the heavenly planets exhaust the results of their pious activities, they return to this earth. In this way, they are elevated to the heavenly planets, and then they again fall to the earthly planets. This process is known as Brahmanda Brahmana, wandering up and down throughout the universe. Those who are intelligent, in other words, those who have not lost their intelligence, do not involve themselves in the process of wandering up and down. They take to the devotional service of the Lord so that they can ultimately penetrate the covering of this universe and enter the spiritual kingdom. Then they are situated on one of the planets known as Vaikuntha Loka, or still higher, Krishna Loka, Goloka, Vrindavan. A devotee is never caught up in the process of being promoted to the heavenly planets and again coming down. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Erupe brahmanda brahmite kona bhagyavan jiva Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Latha Bhij. Among all the living entities wandering throughout the universe, one who is most fortunate comes in contact with the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus gets the opportunity to execute devotional service. Those who are sincerely seeking the favor of Krishna come in contact with a guru. A bona fide representative of Krishna, the Mayavadis indulging in mental speculation and the karmis desiring the results of their actions, cannot become gurus. A guru must be a direct representative of Krishna, who distributes the instructions of Krishna without any change. Thus, only the most fortunate persons come in contact with the guru. As confirmed in the Vedic literatures, tad vijnanartham sagurum eva abhigacchet. One has to search out a guru to understand the affairs of the spiritual world. Srimad Bhagavatam also confirms this point. Tasmat gurum prapadyeta jigyasu sreya uttamam. One who is very interested in understanding the activities in the spiritual world must search out a guru, a bona fide representative of Krishna. From all angles of vision, therefore, the word guru is especially meant for the bona fide representative of Krishna and no one else. Padma Purana states, a Vaishnava guru nasyat. One who is not a Vaishnav or who is not a representative of Krishna cannot be a guru. Even the most qualified Brahman cannot become a guru if he is not a representative of Krishna. Brahmins are supposed to acquire six kinds of auspicious qualifications. They become very learned, patan, and very qualified teachers, patan. They become expert in worshiping the Lord or the demigods, yajan. And they teach others how to execute this worship, yajan. They qualify themselves as bona fide persons to receive alms from others, patigraha. And they distribute the wealth in charity, dan. Yet even a Brahman possessing these qualifications cannot become a guru unless he is the representative of Krishna, guru nasasyat. Vaishnava swapacho guru. But a Vaishnav, a bona fide representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can become a guru even if he is swapacha, a member of a family of dog eaters. Of the three divisions of the heavenly planets, Swargaloka, Bhoma Swarga, is sometimes accepted as the tract of land in Bharatvarsha known as Kashmir. In this region, there are certainly good facilities for material enjoyment, but this is not the business of a pure transcendentalist. Rupa Goswami describes the engagement of a pure transcendentalist as follows. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karmadya navritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. Those who fully engage in devotional service to Krishna just to please him are not interested in the three divisions of heavenly places, namely Divya Swarga, Bhoma Swarga, and Bila Swarga. Among the nine Varshas, the tract of land known as Bharatvarsha is understood to be the field of fruitive activities. Learned scholars and saintly persons declare the other eight Varshas to be meant for very highly elevated pious persons. After returning from the heavenly planets, they enjoy the remaining results of their pious activities in these eight earthly varshas. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 17, entitled The Descent of the River Ganges, Text 10 and 11. Herein, Shukadev Goswami describes the descent of the Ganges River into the heavenly planets. The River Ganges has its origin, the spiritual world. From there, it descends into the causal ocean. And by the grace of Sri Vamanadev, who pierced the covering of the universe with his lotus foot, the River Ganges enters into the universe we live. After washing his feet, it becomes ever more purified. And just as the lotus feet of the Lord can give us shelter, in the same way, the Ganges, who is Vishnupadi, who is coming from the lotus feet of the Lord, can give us shelter. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells that the Lord appears in two ways in this world. In both of these forms, he is most accessible to give shelter to the living entities. He comes in the form of water and wood. In wood, he appears as Lord Jagannath, the Lord of the universe, to give shelter, to purify our hearts, to attract our love. And in the form of water, the Lord appears as Ganga Devi. Lord Jagannath comes out of his temple every year and rides on his chariot through the grand road of Jagannath Puri. In this way, gives his darshan to everyone and anyone who wants to come, even malechas and yavanas like myself are given the darshan of Jagannath on this holy occasion. And Jagannath's mercy is so great. Through his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, that same Lord Jagannath, absolutely non-different from the original Jagannath, has expanded himself to go through the streets of major cities throughout the world, giving darshan, casting his loving glance upon everyone, inviting everyone back into his eternal lila. Bombay, Calcutta, Madras, Delhi. In northern India, there's almost every week there's a Rath Yatra that ISKCON performs. Ludhiana, Amritsar, so many places. It's unbelievable. And tens and thousands, hundreds and thousands of people come for each one. What to speak of Paris and London and Moscow and Kiev, Ukraine, and Hungary, and all the major cities of America, and Nairobi, and Africa, Lagos, Sydney, Melbourne, Rath Yatras everywhere. So Jagannath comes to meet his devotees so merciful, and comes to attract the hearts of so many people. And through technology in Puri, through satellite TV, you can be sitting anywhere in the world and watch Rath Yatra. And similarly, Ganga Devi. We were describing the other day that one time there was a festival on Kartik Purnima in Goloka Vrindavan. It was a festival celebrating the mercy and the love of Srimati Radharani. And Krishna was personally offering his devotion to Srimati Radharani. And at that time, Saraswati Devi sang most beautiful devotional ragas. Hearing this singing, Brahma and Shiva, so pleased, gave her garlands and jewels as gifts. And then Lord Brahma asked Lord Shiva to sing. Then everyone asked Lord Shiva to sing. He sang. He sang so sweetly. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. His love was so deep, so all-pervading, so pure, that all the great souls who were assembled there, they all fell unconscious. And when they came back to consciousness, the whole area of the Ras Mandala was flooded. And Radha Gopinath were gone. So they were in a great dismay. Where is our Lord? Lord Brahma explained to them that due to Lord Shiva's sweet singing, Radha and Krishna melted into this water. They transformed their bodies into this water, which is to be known as Ganga. And then they were praying for Radha and Krishna to appear again. And they heard a voice that if Lord Shiva composes beautiful prayers for the Tantra Shastras, then they will appear again, which they did. So in this way, Ganga Mayi is flowing in Goloka Vrindavan as the transformation of the ecstasy of the love of Radha and Krishna enters into the causal ocean. Lord Vishnu lays down. And all the universes, the whole cosmic manifestation is floating in that ocean. But then Lord Vamanadeva, by his mercy, he brought it into this universe. And first thing, it washed his lotus feet. The feet of the Lord represent service to the Lord. And all living entities can find supreme shelter in the service of the Lord. And the Ganges is none different than the feet of the Lord. And therefore, Vishnupadi, she is flowing. And she's flowing through various streams as well. The Alaknandi Ganga, the Gotami Ganga, the Bhagirathi Ganga, various branches. In the heavenly planets, she is called Mandakini Ganga. In the earthly planet, she is called Bhagirathi Ganga. And even she flows down into the lower regions, where she's called the Bhagavati Ganga. And the spiritual blessing of the Lord in his lotus feet is manifesting everywhere for this purpose. Therefore, Ganga is so highly purified. More people worship Ganga than anyone else. As far as people of this world, Kumbh Mela, 15, 20 million people come. That's more than come to practically anywhere to see any concerts or anything like that. 15, 20 million people with great efforts. Srila Prabhupada, he explains that people perform great austerities to go to Kumbh Mela. Many travel long distances, it's freezing cold, there's no proper facilities, no proper sewage facilities, no proper, just living in tents or on the roadsides. They're very enthusiastic. Why do they come? To meet the sadhus especially, and to take bath in the river Ganges. So we are reading in this chapter of how and why the Lord descends into this world as Ganga Devi. And here we are reading about the various heavenly planets. What is a heavenly planet? It is a more elevated place to enjoy pleasures than we can even imagine. There are 14 planetary systems within the universe. There is the lower planets, Patala Loka, Satala Loka, and like that. Alatala Loka. And we are in a region called Bhuloka. Then there is Bhuvar Loka. And the heavenly enjoyment, the planets of great sensual enjoyment, millions of times greater than here, is the region called Swarga Loka. But of that, above that is planets of higher enjoyment, of more subtle, spiritually oriented enjoyment. There's Janaloka, Mahaloka, Tapaloka, and the topmost planet is Brahmaloka. So here we are reading about these heavenly abodes, specifically Swargalokas. Swargaloka is a whole system of planets where many of the demigods reside and preside over, and enjoyment is so great. Life is very long, there is no disease, the senses are so strong that they can give pleasures hundreds and thousands of times greater than the senses of these ordinary human bodies. And the objects of the senses are so enjoyable, equal to the power of the senses to enjoy are the objects of the senses. Now, foolish people, they say, we don't believe in this. But it only makes sense. In God's creation, why should there only be life here? And in the heavenly planets, their bodies are not as grossly earthly as ours. So even if you were to take a rocket ship to a heavenly planet, unless you had the karma to actually have a heavenly body, you wouldn't be able to see it anyway, because you have earthly eyes. Now, is that impossible? It happens all around us. just because we can't live in water doesn't mean nobody could live in water. There are billions of fish living in water because their karma is they have bodies that are meant for water. They have discovered living entities living in fire. Now, we can't live in that fire, but there are living entities with bodies that are adapted to live within fire. We can't fly like with wings, but that doesn't mean nobody can. So the heavenly planets are more subtle. There is more of a prominence of the ethereal element rather than the earthly element. And you cannot perceive unless your senses are of that quality. Now, in this world, people are very egoistic. An insect thinks that the whole world revolves around them. They cannot conceive of what is beyond. And similarly, a human being who, compared to demigods, are less than an insect. For us to think that there's nothing beyond what we can conceive is a type of false ego. It's an illusion. So just as there are karmic conditions in this world for both suffering and enjoyment, in other words, in this world there are both heavenly and hellish conditions. Similarly, beyond this world, there are planets, there are planetary systems, which are especially suited for people with either extremely good karma or extremely bad karma. Now, in other religions of the world, they believe in heaven and hell. But many conceive that hell is an eternal place of damnation. If you do not believe, if you do not behave properly in this world, or if you do not surrender to a particular group of people's conception of God in reality, then you must go to hell forever. There is no question. I remember one time a evangelist came to me and told me I was going to hell forever. And there was a whole crowd of students, maybe 100 students gathered around. Students like these types of confrontations. When you just speak philosophy, in the West especially, students are not so concerned. But when they see confrontation, it's very attractive. So here's confrontation. An evangelist Christian versus a Hare Krishna. It's like a match. I was just sitting there, and he came to me and said, "You are going to hell." I said, "Well, where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to heaven." I said, "Well, thank you. Why are you thanking me?" "You're going to hell." I said, if heaven is filled with people like you, I'll be happier in hell. But we read in the Vedic literature is that there are many hellish planets. And what are these hellish planets? They are planets where people with very, very intensely sinful karma temporarily go for the purpose of exhausting that karma, bearing the reactions of that karma. Can you imagine what a horrible place such a hell is? In other words, there's no sufferings in this world that can properly give you reaction to your karma. We know how much suffering there is in this world. Well, the greatest, most intensified, horrible sufferings is just not enough for you. So there have to be planets with where you have bodies where you could suffer more. Because the problem with this Earth planet is when suffering gets to a certain extent, you have to die. Your body just can't handle it. Yes? I mean, pain is there, but when it gets to just to a point where it is too unbearable, the body just shuts down and the soul has to leave it, dies. And we have some clues of what kind of sufferings there are in this world. Yes? We've felt it ourselves. We've seen it in others. Can you imagine a suffering that is so much beyond that you get a body worth hundreds and thousands of times more intensified sufferings could come upon you? And your senses in that body experience it in full, but it doesn't fall unconscious and it doesn't die. Hare Krishna. That's what hellish planets are about. Now, would God want any of his children to be there forever? God doesn't want any of his children to be there at all. But God has created laws of karma. And ultimately, the laws of karma are for our purification. Sometimes it takes people a long time to actually understand that principle. But actually, the laws of karma are for our purification. So he has created the 14 planetary systems. And he tells us now, according to your behavior, that's where you're going to go. But I don't want any of you to go to hell, hellish planets. I don't even want any of you to stay in this earthly planet. I don't even want any of you to be in the heavenly planets. I want you to come back home to your original abode, where there's eternal ecstatic bliss, billions and trillions of times greater than the pleasures of the heavens. Just like we were talking about the hellish conditions of this world, and what's beyond that is in the Patala Lokas. Well, similarly, we know how much enjoyment we could have in this world. But these little bodies, you know, how much can they really bear pleasure? If you take the ultimate sensation of pleasure in this world, the most that your body could bear, you know, you just have this little tongue and you have this, you know, this skin. And you know, how much can you really enjoy here? In your mind. Well, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of times, sometimes millions of times greater is the heavenly planets. You have a body where you could really enjoy. You know, you're not eating some nice food and then you accidentally bite your tongue. All the enjoyments fall. In the heavenly planet, you don't do that. Even if you bite your tongue, it feels good. Everything feels good in the heavenly planet. Everything. Your body is only meant for enjoyment. There's no suffering. Can you imagine that? Here in this body, the body can experience both pleasures and pains. But in the heavenly planets, your body doesn't feel pain. It's practically non-existent. Your body's not programmed to suffer. It's only programmed to enjoy. And how it enjoys. Unbelievable enjoyment. When your eyes can see the most beautiful things and your eyes could just drink it in and, oh, just so nice. And there's no ugly things to distract you. There's no pain. There's nothing ugly. There's no pollution. Nothing. Everything's nice. Super nice. And the sense objects, scriptures describe what is somaras. Somaras is an intoxicating beverage. Now, people in this world, they like to get intoxicated. But the intoxications of this world is in the mode of ignorance. It feels good because it just very slightly, you know, causes transformation within your consciousness. But intoxications in this world are unhealthy and very dangerous. People drink alcohol, yes, and they feel good. But then after it starts wearing off, they feel miserable. Yes. Some people, they drink and they feel real good for a while, and they make fools out of themselves while they feel good. And the next day, they're just, they're vomiting, and I shouldn't have done it. Hare Krishna. And meanwhile, their liver's getting eaten away, and all kinds of other bodily forms of destruction are happening. And then they get addicted to it. And then the same thing that's a cause of their pleasure, if they don't have it, they're absolutely miserable. And gradually, whether they have it or not, they're miserable. And drugs are even worse. Intoxicating drugs. So people like to get intoxicated, but the intoxications of this world are very dangerous and the sources of terrible misery. But somaras is the opposite. It feels so good. Unbelievable. You can't imagine. The human brain cannot fathom how good it feels because it never had that experience. All we could do is just imagine. And it's beyond our imagination, because what's beyond your experience is relatively beyond your imagination, is it not? So what is that pleasure of somaras? You have a body that has such massive capacity for pleasure and enjoyment, and the somaras just intensifies and multiplies all your mind and senses to experience enjoyment. When you're on somaras, anything you see just is too much pleasure. It's practically unbearable pleasure. Yes? And it just doesn't last for a few seconds or a night. You could go on drinking it for years. Haribo. And you never get addicted to it. And it's good for your body. It's actually very nutritious and healthy. Of course, in the heavenly planets, you don't need nutrition. Everyone's perfectly healthy. Can you imagine? Everyone is perfectly healthy in heavenly planets. No one gets cold or bronchitis or asthma. There's no cancer or AIDS. Everyone. Very nice place. So the Vedas describe that if you perform very, very pious activities, you can be elevated to an enjoyable heavenly condition in this world. But if you go beyond in your piety, you can actually be elevated to these heavenly worlds. But Krishna warns us in Gita, Abhrama bhuvana loka punar avartan arjuna mamupetya tu konteya punar janma navidyate. That from the highest planet, the highest heavenly abodes, to the lowest hellish condition, and everything in between, they're all places of suffering. Because in the heavenly planets, there's no miseries when you're there, but you have to die. Death is there. And when you die, all those pleasures, it's a painful, miserable condition because you have to leave it all behind and you don't know where you're going. In the heavenly planets, you die when your karma to enjoy is exhausted. And similarly, in the hellish planets, you die when you've worn out your karma for suffering in that condition, then you die. Death in the hellish planets, you look forward to it. You see, there's something special about the heavenly planets. You cannot commit suicide. You have no power to do it. You have no power to kill your own body. You just have to bear it. So death is like releasing from prison in one sense. But still, the spirit soul becomes so conditioned to identifying with their body that generally, even in the hellish planets, people don't want to die. Because they're attached to their body. This is their identity. But you have to. But Krishna says, they're all places of death. They're all places of temporariness. So ultimately, they're all places of misery. But one who attains my abode never takes birth in this world again. Now, most religions, including the Hindu religion or the Vedic religion, most religion is talking about going to heavenly existences, a more pleasurable, enjoyable material life, whether it's Hinduism or Christianity or Judaism or Islam or whatever. It's like we read that some of the terrorists, they're recruited with propaganda that you become suicide bomber. You will die. But if you die, you can go to heaven and you'll get so many beautiful girlfriends there. Because now, you have any girlfriend here? Is she beautiful? So just put this bomb on your back and you'll get just what you want. They're willing to die in the name of God to get beautiful girlfriends. Hare Krishna. Actually do it. So Krishna tells in Sri Bhagavad Gita, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna Nirdvandva Nitya Shatvishto Nir Yoga Kshema Atmavan. That the Vedas, not to speak of other scriptures, the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature. They mainly deal with trying to improve the quality of your material enjoyment and to suffer less. Krishna says, transcend these modes of Arjuna. Transcend these modes of nature, Arjuna. And be transcendental to all of them. Be established in the self, where there is no more attractions or aversions. That is what Gita teaches. Gita rejects heavenly and hellish aspirations. Gita specifically and exclusively is teaching us to go to the transcendental platform of the soul. The soul has nothing to do with the hellish, middle, or heavenly planets. There's no real pleasure for the soul there. It's all illusory. In fact, it is said that the pleasure of Brahman, or mukti, is unlimitedly greater than even the greatest pleasures in the heavenly planets. And the pleasure of love of God is like an ocean in its nature, in its experience. It's like an ocean. And the pleasure of mukti is like a tiny drop in comparison. So Krishna descends because he wants us to enjoy this happiness. It's all merciful, all kind, and he comes again and again in so many ways, in different places, just to invite us back into this type of happiness. But we have our choice. We can go to Krishna, or we can strive for heavenly happiness, or we can act in such a way that's very harmful to ourselves and harmful for others, and then have to bear hellish sufferings. and in this world. It is described herein that, in a sense, there's heavenly planets and hellish planets right in this world. There's places of great happiness and great suffering, relatively. Yes. And the mind. One great author has written that the mind is a thing of itself. The mind could make hell out of heaven or heaven out of hell. It's just the way we interpret and perceive a particular situation. Bhagavad Gita teaches that yoga means to control the mind and the senses. A very positive, optimistic mind can take even miserable situations and be happy there. Yes? And a very pessimistic mind can take even a very happy, enjoyable situation and suffer there. Yes? That's the power of the mind. But manmanabhavabhad bhakto. But when the mind fixes on Krishna, then the mind can actually enter into the spiritual world right here in this body. We can experience Vaikuntha. We can experience Goloka right in this body that we're living in Bombay. Now some people, according to the mind, some people think Bombay is a heavenly planet. And some people think Bombay is a hellish planet. Somewhere in the middle. I mean, I've been with people who come from other places and they see the dirt and they see the sewage and they see the poverty and they see the pollution and they see the traffic jams. Yes? And they see how things just don't work right here compared to the West. And they really feel it's hellish. This is like hell. They hate it here. And I remember I was driving with Shyamasundara Prabhu once, and he was just seeing the same things, and he was like a little boy at Christmas time. He was saying, look at that, and look at that. This is heaven. Bombay is simply heaven. I couldn't see any of the things he was seeing. I said, why is it heaven? Just see how they're dressed so nicely. Everybody's enjoying so nicely. He was just seeing everybody here is just enjoying immensely. It's just his mind. And for devotees, Bombay is the spiritual world. It's the most wonderful place to serve Krishna. Yes. Brahmacharis go through the trains and through the taxis and all kinds of different traffic jams and pollutions, and they're carrying their little bucket of halava and their book bag, and they're going to distribute books, or they're going to some place to give some lecture. And they're seeing every situation as an opportunity to serve Krishna. And Radha Gopinath Temple is here, Radha Rasbihari Temple, Radha Giridhari Temple, where we're actually experiencing Krishna, where our mind is feeling the satisfaction of Krishna. In this way, we're actually, because our mind is Krishna conscious, we're experiencing the spiritual world here. So everything is really based on our perceptions and our mind. Therefore, in the sixth canto, there's a beautiful verse spoken by Lord Shiva. Narayana parasarve nakutashtana bibhyate swaraka pavarga narakeshu apitulyata darshana. This is one of the most beautiful verses ever spoken. And the setting in which this verse is spoken is very, very instructive. Here is Maharaj Chitraketu. A brief summary of the story is he was a king. And this is long ago when kings had several wives. But none of his wives had a son, had a child. And he wanted a child. He had a beautiful throne, wonderful palace. He was an undisputed monarch or king. And kings are not elected. Kings do not have to make alliances with other opposing parties just to form a majority in the parliament. You're born a prince, and then you're coronated as king. And you're as king as long as you want to be king. No one could take you out. That's what a king was. You can just stay on your throne and your rule until you die. Or you can turn it over to one of your sons before you die. It's your choice. Fabulous wealth. He was young and strong. And all of his citizens loved him dearly because he was such a protective and kind-hearted soul. He had everything a materialist could want as far as wealth and prestige and power. But the nature of this world is even if you have everything, if there's one thing you don't have, that can make you miserable. Yes? Srila Prabhupada explains that in the introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam. Despite so much scientific advancement and technological progress and so much economic opportunities, there's a pinprick within society. Yes? Just like if everything's going so nicely in your life, your husband's nice to you, your wife's cooperating, your children are doing everything you want them to do, and you're in perfect health, and your doctors have just given you a clean diagnosis that you're going to live a long life and just feeling so nice, and all your business ventures are just be successful beyond your imagination. Everything you want, you're getting. And then you step on a thorn. And it goes right into your foot. You know, you've seen sometimes in our parikramas when we go barefoot, a thorn goes. Can you enjoy anything? As long as that thorn is in your foot, you cannot enjoy anything. All there is one thing in your mind, the pain of the thorn. And the amazing thing is you have this huge body. And how much of the body is the thorn occupying? The tip of a thorn is you can't even measure it in millimeters. Yes? It's just like a dot. It's like a little tiny dot, and your body is, the amount of surface area of your body is enough for tens and millions of such thorns, right? So you have this whole big body to enjoy, and just one little dot is one little minuscule dot of your body is attacked by a thorn, and that's all you could think of. Yes? This is material life is like that. You know, if your fingertip is aching, it will consume your entire consciousness. And even if there's, you know, mermaids massaging the rest of your body, you'll only think of that. You only think of my finger. Because pain is actually more powerful than pleasure, is it not? It's the way the body is. The experience of pain is more, much, much, much more intense than the experience of pleasure. Did you ever think of it that way? You could be eating a gulab jamun and enjoying like anything. Whatever your favorite prasad is, you can be eating it and you could be seeing the nicest thing. But then if, you know, some thorn just goes to a little dot particle of your body, just penetrates, the pain will be so intense that there'll be absolutely no power to enjoy your glubjamins or whatever you're looking at or whatever you're touching. Yes. Because pain actually has precedent over pleasure in this world. You know, people could enjoy for a few seconds, it comes and goes, but if you see somebody with a chronic disease that's really suffering, it just doesn't go away. We have seen it. People who have advanced stages of cancer, or people who get in, I mean, for months, they're just screaming in agony. Now, is there anything comparative in this world of pleasure, where you're in that's it's such intense pleasure constantly? Has anyone heard of such a thing? So these bodies we have, factually, have more capacity to suffer than enjoy. It's a more intensified experience. So here's Chitraketu. He has everything except a son. And therefore, he's totally miserable. It's not that he's just looking at the jewels in his throne thinking, this is relief for me. It's not that he's looking at the magnificent architecture of his palace and saying, now I'm pacified. No, nothing can pacify you. When some suffering comes into your life, it becomes very, very powerful. Even if it's one, even if you're enjoying a million things, one bad thing could spoil it all. Just like Lord Chaitanya, in one example, he says, you could be eating a magnificent feast, and if somebody insults you very bad, then you can't even eat another. You're so tormented by that insult, you lose your appetite. You can't even eat. So that was Chitraketu. And so Parvat Muni, he came to see her. Angira Muni, yes, it was Angira Muni. Came to visit Chitraketu. Said, King, why do you look so miserable? What's wrong? Have you not served the Brahmins properly? Or have you not given charity to people in need? Or have you not performed your religious activities today? Because these are the, for a pious person, these are the things that make them miserable. Not doing good things makes them suffer. And he's super pious. So Chitraketu said, no, I've done all those things. But I'm miserable. Nothing can make me happy. The world is a dreary void because I have no son. Give me the blessing to have a son. Is that what you really want? Yes. You will have a son. And he will be Harshashoka. That means he will give you pleasure and he will give you pain. But every son gives you pleasure and pain. Does it not? Usually much more than daughters. Somehow or other, the male species just have a special capacity to make people suffer. Especially when they're children. What's that saying? Sugar and spice and everything nice, that is what little girls are made of. And boys, frogs and snails and pulling puppy dog tails, that's what little boys are made of. Very mischievous. We see. girls are pretending to cook like their mothers, and they're dressing nice dolls and doing so many things, and boys want guns, and they want to shoot each other, and they want bows and arrows to shoot each other, and they want to beat each other. Yes? Very strange. Anyways, it takes one to know one. So every boy is going to give you misery, and every boy is going to give a parent happiness too. So Harsha Ashoka, he didn't mind whatever miseries, because the pleasure would be so nice. So he had a son, a little baby. Oh, then the whole kingdom was celebrating, and he and his wife were so happy. So happy, a son is born. And he was born in good health, and he was beautiful. The whole world was, it was like, his palace was like a heavenly planet to him, because he had a son. But this world is, one man's food is another man's poison. Because there's something very horrible about this world that we live in. That the more you are prosperous, the more people are going to envy you. That is a fact. Whatever opulence you have, people are going to envy you. If you have beauty, there are people who are going to be envious of you. If you have wealth, people are going to be envious. If you have strength, if you have knowledge, if you have fame, even if you have renunciation. Amongst renunciates, people are envious of each other. Yes? This person is doing Nirjali Kadasi. I pray to the deities that he drinks water. Ruins is fast. So we can be envious. Any opulence a person has, some people are going to be attracted to it, but other people are going to be envious of it. And some people in this world thrive when people envy them, because it's considered a great compliment. Yes, if somebody's envious of my glamorous beauty, that's a great compliment. They hate you for it. Envy is a type of hatred. There's a difference between jealousy and envy. Jealousy could be that I'm glad you have it. I'm happy for you for having it. But I wish I had it too. In fact, I wish I had even more than you, but I'm glad you have what you have. That's a feeling. It could be jealousy. But envy is very negative. I can't tolerate the fact that you have this. We'd rather see you destroyed than having this. Yes? Business, so much envy in business, so much envy in athletics, so much envy in sports, so much envy in politics, so much envy everywhere. And that's what happened to Chitraketu. He and his wife's happiness, to the degree they were happy, the co-wives were miserable because the son was not theirs. Now this particular wife is getting all the attention, and we're not. Now they were actually good people. They weren't demons. Chitraketu would not marry demons. Obviously, before he got married to these other ladies, he checked them out very carefully, and he was very intelligent. He probably did astrological calculations of their horoscopes, yes? And it was very nice, pious samskaras. But envy could make a good person bad. So they conspired to poison the child secretly. Can you imagine? The wives of the king secretly gave poison to his only son. and he died. And to whatever extent Maharaj Chitraketu enjoyed having a son, even more he suffered. Yes? That's the nature. Suffering is more powerful than enjoyment in this world. He was enjoying tremendously, but when he lost what he was enjoying, he suffered more intensely. It was unbearable. He became practically mentally paralyzed. He was dysfunctional. He couldn't do anything. He couldn't rule his state. He couldn't even talk. He was just absolutely devastated. The object of his greatest pleasure had now become the object of dire suffering. Then Narada Muni came with Angira Muni. Oh, King Chitraketu, you have a son. I had a son. He was suffering so bad. So Narada Muni, by his mystic powers, he rose him from the dead. This bringing people back from the dead is not an exclusive thing of one religion. It happens. There are innumerable examples of this in the Vedas also, of great sages who have that power. So he brought him back, and the sun got up. And Narada Muni said, "Oh, Jiva, tell us why you left your father like this." And he said, "What father are you talking about?" "I'm a spirit soul, not this body." I'm paraphrasing. "I've had so many lives, and in every life I have a father, I have a mother, I have brothers, sisters, uncles, whatever. I have so many. Which father is this?" In the long chain, they're only relevant and we're attached to them as long as we're in this body. But as soon as a soul goes to another body, you don't even remember your previous fathers and mothers. If they come to you in a future life, you won't even recognize them. So he spoke transcendental knowledge. And the little boy preached in such a way that he enlightened Chitraketu. It's amazing, isn't it? Narada Muni, Angira Muni, and all these great pandits and sadhus, they couldn't enlighten Chitraketu. He couldn't hear from them because of his attachment. But the little boy could affect his heart so powerfully that he became a totally enlightened person. And then the little boy asked for permission to die again, which he did. And then Chitraketu was absolutely detached. And from that point on, he became a pure devotee. He became a Paramhamsa, a great Vaishnav. He performed yajnas, he performed devotional service in such a way that he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. He's a great soul. But one time when he was traveling, he happened to see Lord Shiva giving a discourse on renunciation to sadhus. And while he was giving this to sannyasis and babajis, he's giving a discourse on renunciation, and his wife, Parvati, is sitting on his lap. Now that looked very amazing. And Chitraketu actually was amazed. He wasn't critical, he was just amazed. And he just, how wonderful it is. Amazing, Lord Shiva, you're in an assembly of renunciates who've given up, who are total celibates, and you're telling them about how to do it with your wife on your lap. Now he was glorifying in his own way, but Parvati, she misunderstood. She thought that he's criticizing my husband. So she cursed him to become a demon and go to hell. Hare Krishna. Now, how many of you would enjoy being cursed to become a demon and go to hell? Please raise both your hands and loudly say Hari Bol. Well, if Chitraketu was here, he would have chanted Hari Bol so loud that it would have been thousands of times more tumultuous than all of you put together. He was in ecstasy. He bowed down to Parvati and said, thank you, Mataji, thank you. This is very good. He said, actually, you didn't understand what I was saying. You misunderstood. I was not criticizing your husband. I was glorifying your husband in my own way. But still, you cursed me to become a demon and go and have hellish situations. So I'm very grateful to you for this. Thank you very much. Now, with your permission, I will proceed to hell to become a demon. Yes? Lord Shiva was watching. And he was amazed. He was ecstatic. What a great person this is. And then he recited this particular verse. He's speaking to Parvati. Narayana parasarve nakutashtana bibhyate swarga pavarga narakeshu apituliyarta darshana. Just see the nature of a devotee. Just see the nature of the devotees of Lord Narayan. They are so happy serving Narayan. It doesn't matter where they are. To them, whether they're in the heavenly planets where there's unbelievable enjoyment, or whether they're in a hellish planet where there's unbearable suffering, to them, there's no difference. It's all the same. They don't care for pleasure. They don't care for pain. Because they're tasting the sweetness of serving the Lord. They're only concerned with pleasing the Lord. That is transcendental. That is the spiritual platform. Vishayavani vartante niraharasya dehina rasa varajamarasopyasya param drisvani vartate. One can rise above the attractions and aversions of this world when one experiences a higher taste. And what is that higher taste? Love of God. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was speaking to Ramananda Rai, Ramananda Rai was telling about if a person performs profuse pious activities, he could be elevated to the heavenly planets. If a person negates all desires within this world, he can enter into the impersonal Brahman. But therein, Srila Prabhupada explains that a devotee, Kaivalya Narakayate, Prabodhananda Saraswati, he says, I'd rather be in hell than in the impersonal Brahman. I'd rather have residence in a hellish planet than to be in a state of impersonal mukti. How many of you could honestly say that? Why? He says, because in the state of impersonal mukti, there's no suffering. But we lose consciousness of our individual identity and our relationship with God. So there's no chance of performing devotional service in the impersonal Brahman. And my life is for the pleasure of Krishna. I'd rather be in a hellish planet serving Krishna than be with absolutely no pain without service. Yes? And then he explains, what is the hellish planets? It's a will-o'-the-wisp. It's just an illusion. All the pleasures of the heavenly planets are just illusions. So a devotee is not concerned with heavenly planets. A devotee is not concerned with hellish planets. A devotee is not concerned with impersonal Brahman. A devotee is only concerned with service, because that is love. A devotee only wants to love God. Ashlisya vapadaratam panashtu mama darshana marmahatam kurotuva. Yatata tata vitatatu lampato mat purananatastu se eva napara. My Lord, I'm your servant. I love you. I live for your pleasure. If you want, you can embrace me. If you want, you can trample on me. If you want, you can make me brokenhearted by not being present before you. Chitraketu, his mood was, my Lord, I'm your loving service. I'm happy to serve you in any situation. If you like, you can send me to the heavenly planets. If you like, you can send me down to the hellish planets. It doesn't matter at all. My standard of joy is simply to serve you, and I can serve you anywhere, in any situation, except the impersonal Brahman. Don't send me there. That is love. That is ahoitakiya pratihata. That is unmotivated, uninterrupted service. And Rupa Goswami is speaking here, Anya vilashita shunyam jnana karmanya navratam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. Pure devotional service is free of any desires. Free of the desires for the fruit of enjoyments of the heavens. Free of the desire for impersonal liberation from all suffering. Free of enjoyment of the desires for mystic, miraculous powers. A devotee doesn't want to perform miracles. A devotee doesn't want to enjoy unbelievable experiences. Why? Param drisva nivartate. A devotee wants to water the root of the tree. A devotee simply wants to be enjoyed by Krishna. The ultimate experience that gives us that transcends all other experiences is the experience of giving one's heart to be enjoyed. The only way we can actually transcend permanently the desire to enjoy is to experience a pleasure that is billions of times greater. And that's to be enjoyed. Yes? To enjoy in this world is a yehi samsparashacha bhoga dhuka jonayevate atyantavanta konte anate shuramate. When you enjoy this world, then there's a concomitant reaction because it's temporary. Whether it's heavenly or whether it's hellish, or there's no, well, even if it's heavenly. But something greater than that is the spiritual platform. And the spiritual platform is to be enjoyed. And how are we enjoyed? Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta priyachchati. Even if we offer Krishna a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or some water, the simplest things with devotion, Krishna enjoys. He enjoys our devotion. And when Krishna enjoys, he reciprocates. When we are enjoyed by Krishna, Krishna gives us unlimited enjoyment. And the supreme enjoyers are the gopis, but they care nothing for enjoyment. They only want to be enjoyed. More than anyone, they only want to be enjoyed. They care nothing for themselves. They only want to please Krishna. When Narada Muni approached the gopis and said, Krishna wants the dust of your feet to be put on his head because he has a headache. The gopis started collecting the dust. Bring it immediately, immediately. Narada Muni asks, what are you doing? Do you know what you're doing? I've asked so many people. I've asked great rishis. I've asked great pundits for the dust. They won't give it because they know if you put your feet on God's head, you'll go to hell. Don't you have any fear of God? you put your feet on his head, you're going to go to hell. They said, we know all about that. We know about all that. Just put the dust on his head. If it gives Krishna even one moment of pleasure, we're willing to go to hell forever. That is the unconditional nature of the gopi's love. And because of the intensity and the purity of their love, Krishna reciprocates. And therefore, he gives them the ultimate happiness, the ultimate spiritual bliss, the ananda. There is no one else that can enjoy more than the gopis, and even the spiritual worlds, because they are receiving the most intense experience of Krishna's love. But the amazing thing is, they don't care about their own happiness. They only care about Krishna's happiness. Whether it's there or not makes no difference to them. What only makes a difference is how they can please Krishna. That is called love. And Krishna's Rasa Bihari. He's the connoisseur, Rasa Shekhar, Rasik Shekhar. He's the connoisseur, reciprocator of love. Nobody else can be like Krishna. When you show a little love for Krishna, Krishna inundates you with oceanic experience of ecstasy because he's showering his love on you. We could love Krishna with our capacity, but when Krishna reciprocates and loves us with his capacity, it's unlimited. And that's the enjoyment we get. But in order to get that enjoyment, you have to not want it. You have to just want to please the Lord, because that's what love is about. Now, it's a hellish planet. Yes? This is what men and women do in this world. Human beings have free will. It is said, we have quoted, that the mind is a thing in itself. It could create heaven out of hell or hell out of heaven. But the mind can also impel the body to act in such a way to actually do the same thing in a physical way. Due to the uncontrolled, violent minds of people, they have created such a beautiful, beautiful, pristine part of God's nature into hell. It was terrorism and fear. And people who've been living relatively happy there for generations and generations are escaping. They're coming to Bombay for refuge. Yes? They're going to Delhi for refuge from Kashmir because it's more peaceful. So this is the special quality of a human being. We have our free will. We could make this world a heavenly planet. We could make this world a hellish planet. Or we could make this world Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. By learning how to live in pure devotional service, gather together, and chant the holy name. It's very late. Is it very late? It's late, but not very late. We'll have one question. Would anyone like to ask a question? Gauranga Prabhu, you could select.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, you told that means at a spiritual platform, our nature is to please Krishna, or means to be enjoyed, not to enjoy. But usually we see that, you know, while taking delicious prasadam, we enjoy by dancing, we enjoy. Means it's not like that Krishna is enjoying, means as it, according to my feeling, means I think that I'm enjoying, I am dancing, I am taking prasadam. So how it is that means Krishna, I am being enjoyed?
Because Krishna likes to see you enjoy, so you should enjoy. We should enjoy Krishna consciousness. It's very enjoyable. We should enjoy prasad, we should enjoy kirtan, we should enjoy japa. Should enjoy reading Srimad Bhagavatam. We should enjoy fasting. Krishna loves to see our enjoyment. But devotional service means if we're doing it for Krishna, if we enjoy it, we just accept that as Krishna's mercy. But if we don't enjoy it, we do it anyway because it's for Krishna. It's not that we're dancing in kirtan and I can't enjoy this. No, you should enjoy. Dancing is kevala ananda kanda. It's enjoyable. Krishna wants you to enjoy good things. He wants you to enjoy being purified. He doesn't want you to enjoy being putrefied. Yes? Material consciousness is we want to enjoy things that just incriminate us in more and more karma. That type of enjoyment is an illusion. But to enjoy activities and thoughts that purify our heart and bring us closer to Krishna, it's wonderful. But the important thing that determines our service attitude is we will do the same thing for Krishna's pleasure even if we're not enjoying. Even if you don't enjoy dancing, you'll do it for Krishna. Even if that day ever comes, God forbid, that you're not blissfully enjoying your japa, you'll still do it because Krishna enjoys it. And to come and see the deity is, the devotees are working so hard to help to manifest Krishna's all-attractive beauty. We're supposed to enjoy seeing the deities, but we should do it in a service attitude. We're coming before the deities to be enjoyed. We're chanting japa to be enjoyed. We're doing kirtan to be enjoyed. And factually, we're eating prasad to be enjoyed. It's not that you're enjoying the prasad. The prasad should enjoy you. Yes? And the prasad enjoys you when you enjoy prasad. But our mentality is we're taking this prasad for the pleasure of Krishna. We're seeing the deities because we want to become purified by the experience. We're coming to serve the Lord. And Krishna is very happy when we enjoy spiritual things. Yes? Now, what would make you happier? If I give you this garland, like, oh, I'm so grateful to you. Please, please accept this garland. Or if I just take this garland and go, you know, here, I was told I have to give this to you, throw it in your face. Which will you enjoy better? Either way, the activity is the same. I'm giving you garland. But if I enjoy giving it to you, that gives you enjoyment. If I hate giving it to you, even if I give it to you, it doesn't give you enjoyment. That's part of love. But the enjoyment is not what's in it for me. The enjoyment is I enjoy doing for you. That's love. And we want to come to that platform. Well, japa is the most enjoyable thing in the 14 worlds because Krishna enjoys me doing it. Yes? Even if I'm suffering doing it, the fact that I'm doing it anyway, Krishna's enjoying, that makes me happy. Yes? So, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And now it is time to enjoy prasad. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi. Thank you very much.